With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, fellow optimists. It's Sophia Tapia here, your host on the Future Positive Podcast, a podcast from XPRIZE that aims to bring you the most future-forward topics from the world's brightest minds. If you're new to Future Positive, in each episode, you'll hear from world leaders, creators, entrepreneurs, innovators, and changemakers who are paving the way for innovation on and off this planet we call home. June 1st marks the beginning of Pride Month. And to celebrate, we're bringing a series of interviews conducted by Amelia Abraham with leading figures from the LGBTQ community who are impacting our world for the better. First up is Lucas LaRochelle, a designer and researcher whose work is concerned with queer and trans digital cultures, community-based archiving, and co-creative media. They are the founder of Queering the Map, a community-generated counter-mapping platform that digitally archives queer experience in relation to physical space. So, sit tight, forward all calls, and get ready for takeoff.
Hey, Lucas.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. So where in the world are you right now?
I am calling from Jajage Muniang, or Montreal, which is on the unceded lands and waters of the Ganyangahaga Nation.
Amazing. And could you introduce yourself for our listeners, please, in terms of what it is you do?
Absolutely. I'm a designer, artist, and researcher, and my work is concerned with queer and trans digital cultures, community-based archiving, critical digital media, and increasingly artificial intelligence. I'm also the founder of Queering the Map, which is a community-generated countermapping platform for digitally archiving LGBTQ2IA+ experience in relation to physical space.
Okay, and in kind of everyman terms, what does that mean? What does that look like when you hit the website and you get there? What do you get?
Absolutely. So you type in on your browser www.queeringthemap.com, and you are taken to a pink map of the world onto which there are many black pins, all of which contain stories of queer and trans experience from all across the world, ranging from the banal to the fantastic, from the joyous to the traumatic, all in an effort to archive what it means to be a queer and or trans person in relation to the built environment. So users can click a point on the map, add a story in whatever way they want to describe that story, in whatever language or form of writing that they want to communicate in. And once the stories are moderated by a small group of human moderators, they appear publicly on the map. And it's important to note that every submission is made anonymously, so there's no user data that is associated with the points in the Queering the Map database, which is an effort to maintain the privacy of everyone who contributes to the platform.
One thing I really love about Queering the Map is there isn't necessarily a date on any of the memories or experiences, so they kind of span time, but you know, sometimes it explains when it was, and sometimes it doesn't. So it kind of blurs the idea of what history means.
Totally, yeah. I mean, that's a significant component of how Queering the Map is organized, or rather disorganized, that it's an archive, but it's a very messy or queer archive in terms of its relationship to history. And this is an intentional decision that was made to try to refute the West, particularly Western idea of time as a linear phenomenon, which is particularly rooted or applied to create this idea of progress, inclusion-based progress. And queering the map is interested in disrupting that sort of linear, that linear model, thinking about how past, present, and future collide with one another.
Could you maybe let us know what an example of one that you really like, or one that stands out in your mind?
Absolutely. Give me a second, I'll pull one up. And I am gonna actually find the one that I like the most, or one of the ones. I mean, there's 134,000 stories on the map as it currently stands. So picking one is very challenging.
Yeah, we should just say for the listener that you're flicking through a book right now looking for one of your favorite entries.
Yes. So this one is in Lida, or Lod, which is Israeli-occupied Palestinian territory. And it reads, "I was forced to come out to aggressive border control agents here. They denied my sexuality and were overtly homophobic. As a queer Arab woman, they saw me as a threat. The idea of Tel Aviv being a haven for LGBT plus people in the Middle East is a myth. I found greater acceptance in Palestine. Long live Palestine."
Amazing. Thank you. That's a very timely entry as well.
Absolutely.
And then sometimes, so there's this whole run of experiences, because sometimes you go on it and it's like, got drunk and had my first kiss here. And then sometimes it's something like that, which kind of makes you pause for thought. Another question about queering the map is, how global is it?
Currently, there are stories on every single continent, including Antarctica, where there are numerous speculations about the lives of queer and trans penguins, polar bears, sharks, orcas, fish, etc. Which is really exciting in terms of thinking about how people are using queering the map. Also, to your point about, you know, there are those stories about got drunk and had my first kiss. There's stories that are upending Western myths of particular locations as the only kinds of safe places for queer people, as is the case with the pinkwashing of Israel. And then there's also these stories of that are fantastical in nature, speculating on the possibility of these queer and trans animals. There's also various fan fiction entries. And so it really runs the gamut in terms of how people are articulating queer life, both in the real and also through fantasy, which I think is a really exciting way that the platform is being used.
I think I should say at this point, though, I'm pretty sure I have read that researchers have found gay penguins. So maybe
it's true whether or not they're in the exact locations that people have tagged them on queering the map is, you know, TBD, but it's true. I mean, yes, we know that there's much queer life in the animal kingdom outside of the human.
And what year did you create this, and how has it have evolved other than gaining new entries since that year?
I started the platform in 2017, and then in late 2017, and then by early 2018, the platform really took off and has been growing steadily since then. It has very much become the bedrock of my artistic practice. So it's something that I write about, something that I speak about, that I continue to research and work on and around. In 2019, I had the opportunity to launch an exhibition and public programming project called Queering the Map on Site, which was thinking about what it might mean to leak the kind of digital community that's been formed on Queering the Map, the website, into a temporary physical location. And that was a really exciting way of trying to bridge that, you know, thinking about what the internet cannot do, which is that sense of presence, that sense of being with other people in a particularly embodied way, was really exciting to explore in that exhibition. Of course, then, you know, next, then in 2020, There was not the possibility to remount that sort of in-space public programming project, which is something that I'm really interested in exploring again as the world opens up, thinking about a deeper relationship that can be formed between Queering the Map, the digital platform, and building queer and trans community in real physical life, which is not to say that the digital is not real by any means. It's incredibly real, but I'm really interested in what forms the project can take that enable the growth of communities on the ground, AFK, away from keyboard, as Legacy Russell, the author of Glitch Feminism, might say.
Yeah. And talk to me about QtBot, an AI trained on the Queering the Map database data.
Absolutely. So QtBot is the project that I've been working on since late 2019, early 2020, which is, as you said, it's an artificial intelligence that's trained on the textual and visual data of Queering the Map. So the technical way of describing what the project is that it's a database of the textual stories from Queering the Map, as well as a database of the scraped Google Maps Street View imagery that correspond to all of the points on the map. And using artificial intelligence and machine learning tools, I have created a hybrid subjectivity that weaves together all of these stories and all of these locations to create warped, somewhat confusing, somewhat fantastical visions of the queer and trans past, present, future, non-linear continuum. And so this has taken the form of a series of posters called Sitting Here With You in the Future, which superimpose some of the text that QtBot has created on top of some of the images that it's created, as well as what I describe as a sort of speculative documentary, also called Sitting Here With You in the Future, that leads viewers through this warped world as narrated by QtBot.
Amazing. And in terms of AI more broadly, I wondered, have you had any time to think about what are some of the kind of watch outs when it comes to AI and LGBTQ plus rights, or indeed making sure that AI is more inclusive when it comes to LGBTQ plus people?
Absolutely. I mean, these are the kinds of central questions that I'm thinking about as I'm using QtBot as an artistic medium to explore these kinds of concerns. When I started the project, one of the situations that I was responding to was the news that a researcher by the name of Mikhail Kosinski had developed what was colloquially referred to as a gaydar AI, which was said to, I think, in the like 95th plus percentile to be able to identify whether or not someone was gay.
Based on their facial structure, right?
Based on their facial structure, exactly. Of course, what this means is that people were classifying humans were classifying data sets of people and deciding based on their own interpretation as to whether or not they were queer. And it's been, the science behind this has been entirely disproven, but the fact that this kind of work is being done, this attempt to use the pseudo-objectivity of data science and machine learning to identify queer people, is absolutely terrifying. This example brings up really important questions around what the relationship between visibility and surveillance looks like. So often conversations around AI, conversations around exclusion and discrimination in AI will be met with a sort of surface level demand for inclusion. If the AI is not recognizing particular communities, then we need to include those communities within the data sets so that it can be more diverse. But the questions that we need to ask are, what are the endpoints of those kinds of tools that are being built? Who are the stakeholders? And those stakeholders are often corporations and state state systems that are working in tandem with one another, as AI is, you know, part of the sort of tech Wild West. It's a largely ungoverned development in technology. And so thinking critically about what it means to be quote unquote included in these data sets is one of the central questions in QTBot. And the way that I'm thinking about that is what it means to refuse visibility or use AI to undo itself, to use AI to become, to make data sets more opaque, to make things make less sense, to make things less legible, as a way of refusing the call to be included in these applications of technology that can have very nefarious uses.
That makes perfect sense. You know, this AI is created to categorize us, perhaps, when even before we've categorized ourselves.
Absolutely.
What are you most thankful for when it comes to tech generally as a queer person?
I mean, I often say that the internet saved my life, and I mean that with no hyperbole, even though I am a very hyperbolic person. The internet was the first place that I saw that there were people whose experiences were similar to mine, and I wouldn't have the confidence in my experience or the community that I currently have had I not had access to the internet at the age that I did. And so I'm very thankful for technology, and specifically internet-based technologies, to be able to bring together communities that would otherwise not form the ways that they do.
Thanks for listening to this Future Positive podcast. If you'd like to support our show, share this episode with fellow futurist friends, and remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Apple or wherever you get your pods. Your feedback does help. This podcast comes from XPRIZE, a global future positive movement of over 1 million people and rising, delivering radical breakthroughs for the benefit of humanity. Sign up to join us and support the movement that is making a change in the world 10 times faster. Whether it's lending a hand, a dollar, or an idea, we all have a role to play in making the future a better place. The only way to get the future we want is to create it ourselves. Learn more at xprize.org. See you next week.